From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, chaos at the FBI, plus a powerful story of one man who went from poverty to political powerhouse. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. On Wednesday of this week, Washington Watch guest host and FRC's senior fellow for Biblical Worldview, Joseph Backholm, sat in for Tony Perkins while he continued his much-deserved vacation, and he began the show with a discussion about recent resignations and whistleblowers from within the FBI in the wake of the raid at former President Trump's Florida home called Mar-a-Lago. Joining Joseph was Representative Dan Bishop of North Carolina.
Congressman Bishop, good to see you today.
Hey, Joseph. Good to be with you.
Let's get into this story. There's lots of back and forth. We know that some FBI officials resigned last week over some concerns about impartiality. We'll put it that way. And now we have these reports from whistleblowers. What's your reaction to all of this?
It's very troubling. Ever since the raid on Trump's Mar-a-Lago compound, the questions have been multiplying, but that appeared at the same time almost that new whistleblowers came forward to Senators Grassley and Johnson and also Ranking Member Jim Jordan. There's just a swirl of controversy that continues to sort of go on and on around the Department of Justice and FBI, and Americans are justifiably concerned about it. And Republicans have appropriately been asking questions, but I would say these newest developments, I mean, where there's smoke, there's fire. Mr. Tebow, who was who left the FBI Washington field office in the last couple of days, you know, that appears to be there's a reason that he was essentially ushered out, I'm sure.
Now we hear about these whistleblowers, plural. Do you know how many people we're talking about?
I know that I've heard the word 20 mentioned in connection with by Ranking Member Jordan over the course of the last year, roughly. And I don't know what the numbers are for Senators Grassley and Johnson, except I know they're different people. So there are a lot of people within the FBI who are concerned about the way that agency is being managed and about the implications, the apparent politicization of the FBI, and it should be of concern to every single American. It should be of concern to President Biden as well.
Well, it seems that one man's whistleblower is another man's traitor, and it depends on the side of the issue that you're on, and it seems to swing in a partisan way. And we know that Attorney General Merrick Garland responded to these reports of whistleblowers with a memo to the department reminding everyone that it is against department policy to have communications with members of Congress. Is this an appropriate response? Is that just a way to remind staff what the rules are, or do we think it's something more serious than that?
Well, the timing is very remarkable, coming amidst all of these developments, and it seems to be internally contradictory. So the folks who've come to the two senators that I mentioned and the Ranking Member Jordan are FBI whistleblowers. The law protects whistleblowers. And this statement from the Department of Justice at once discourages or talks about, you know, how employees of the Justice Department should not be in touch with Congress except through channels. But on the other hand, they say, but we don't mean to undermine whistleblower protections. So which is it? I think they are speaking out of both sides of their mouth. And I think that's the last thing the Justice Department and the FBI need to be doing at this point in time.
I think one of the challenges that Attorney General Merrick Garland has is his history, which is not necessarily his fault. But because he was a nominee to the Supreme Court by President Obama, and his nomination was stopped essentially by the election of President Trump, his role now as Attorney General, which it seems to be perpetually investigating former President Trump in some way, it just doesn't smell right. Because even if he is behaving above board in all ways, the fact that his opportunity to be on the Supreme Court was stopped by President Trump just kind of creates this appearance of impropriety, even if there isn't real impropriety. And to that point, Congressman Bishop, Do we think that you're the Republicans in Congress are going to have a chance to investigate this issue? And if so, do you think there's a way to do this in a way that doesn't just continue to inflame the partisan differences? Is there a way to bring people together around a common set of facts and a common understanding of what our country is supposed to be?
Yeah, Joseph, it's very difficult to accomplish anything on a bipartisan basis in Washington as attitudes are now displayed. And I, you know, obviously people would say this is one-sided, but I've seen it displayed with, you know, without exception by Democrats in control. They've not sought to work with Republicans. They've used their majority to run over Republicans. I think we ought to have an open hand to try to encourage Democrats to join with us if we're in the majority as we conduct oversight. But oversight needs to be done in an unprecedented way. It needs to be creative. It needs to be aggressive. But a lot of it can occur in private. It doesn't necessarily always have to be a public hearing where everyone's trying to take, you know, get sound bites developed. But we need to know, you know, what is the problem? I don't think it's in the interest of either party for the FBI and the Department of Justice to be politicized. Now, Democrats have used it in a politicized way since President Trump first came on the scene in 2016. But and we've seen that over and over again. I think to your point about the Attorney General, he has unfortunately stepped right into the middle of that when he issued his memo last October targeting parents of school children and trying to suggest that they're harbingers of threats and the like. But I think nobody in America, the people on both Democrat and Republican side out there, do not desire to see this government become a partisan battering ram, or to continue to be. And so I think if we all get together on that score, we can make progress together.
And so to that point, to maybe ask you to rephrase that a bit, then do you really believe that people care if the FBI has been politicized? Is that a bipartisan concern in people's heart of hearts, where they understand that if the FBI essentially becomes a political wing of the White House, that's a real problem for our country? Do both parties understand that?
You know, Joseph, I just had a telephone call today with someone who's very influential on the Homeland Security side, and I also serve on that committee. And one of the things that person said was exactly that. That I don't, you know, there may be momentary political gain that people want to have. And so when they see the FBI, DOJ go out and do the bidding of Democrats and interfere with in elections on their behalf and the like, they may think in the short term that that's beneficial. But all of these things can be turned around. And in fact, you know, it gets very difficult to continue to be the party that favors neutral, fair, and unpoliticized law enforcement if you're always the victim of the other side using it that way. So, yeah, I don't think Democrats in the country, you know, the people, the American people, or independents, any more than Republicans, believe that, you know, using the FBI that way is the right answer.
Yeah, I agree with you, certainly within the public. I hope it's true within Washington State, or within the nation, within Washington, D.C., excuse me. My concern is that humility and recognizing mistakes and errors and trying to correct those is seen as politically vulnerable. So nobody ever does it anymore. And of course, nobody can govern perfectly. But the incentives to admit our mistakes and correct our mistakes just don't seem to be there. But Congressman Bishop, I want to change topics with you very briefly. President Biden gave a speech yesterday where he may have surprised a few of his supporters with his pro-police message. He said the answer is not to defund the police, but to increase funding. Let's play clip one.
When it comes to public safety in this nation, the answer is not defund the police. It's fund the police. Fund the police.
Now, this represents a significant change in his party's messaging. And Congressman Bishop, I know you have something to say, but I want to play one more thing. And I think I'm going to maybe steal some words from your mouth. But let's play clip two to get a sense of what his party has been saying recently.
Defunding the police has to happen. We need to defund the police.
We will be moving funding from the NYPD to youth initiatives and social services.
Yes, I support the defund movement.
You know, a lot of us were asked if we could imagine a future without police back in 2017 when we were running for office. And I answered yes to that question.
We are going to reduce funding in the police department and redirect that money.
Police departments are taking a sizable amount of the budget of a lot of municipalities and other entities. We need to look at those budgets, pull some of the money back, and invest it in other things.
It means a dramatic reduction in the number of police in our poor communities, and particularly our poor Black and brown communities.
I'm asking you to ask yourself, what are you willing to sacrifice to make sure that overfunded police departments are defunded?
Congressman Bishop, of course, that's a montage. Several Democratic members of Congress, Mayor de Blasio, among others. Is this an intra-party fight?
Well, perhaps so. As you say, the words in their own words convict them in a broad swath of the Democratic Party. In fact, I would say this, Joseph, President Biden's comments about that and saying you shouldn't defund the police, fund it. It comes awfully late. And so you'd have to say even he, if it's an intra-party fight, has been absent on the fighting field for months and months and months while this developed in 2020 and carried on through the early part of his presidency. And here's what's worse. When he chose to trot that out, it appears to be a cynical effort to demonize half the country because he falsely accuses Republicans of being for defunding. So it does seem to be a very disturbing, despicable kind of commentary by Biden at this point in time.
Yeah, and we actually don't have the time at this point to play that clip where he goes on to accuse Republicans of trying to defund the police. It is irony. Some might call it gaslighting, but it is political season, and sometimes up is down and down is up. But Congressman Bishop, thanks for stopping by and helping us understand it today.
Thank you, Joseph. Good to be with you.
You can find out more about Dan Bishop when you visit TonyPerkins.com. That's TonyPerkins.com.
Attention high school and college students, I'm Joseph Backholm, Senior Fellow for Biblical Worldview, inviting you to join me for a free worldview session on Friday, September 16th from 4 to 7 p.m. at First Baptist Atlanta. You'll learn what worldview is, why it matters, and then have an Ask Anything session where you can ask anything about the issues of the day. So be ready to think and be challenged. Register online at prayvotestand.org/summit or by calling 877-372-2808. We'll see you there.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. On Thursday, we had the honor to share the inspiring story of Mark Robinson, a man who came from the depths of poverty to become the Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina. Here's guest host Joseph Backholm as he began this inspiring conversation.
Mr. Lieutenant Governor, thanks for coming by today.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, your book is titled We Are the Majority. Where did that title come from, and what are you referring to when you say we?
Well, originally the book was titled, the manuscript was titled I Am the Majority, but we felt like that was just a little bit too simplistic. That was the line that I said in the speech that I gave at the Greensboro City Council, but we wanted to be a little more inclusive, so to speak, with this, and a little more expressive with the title. We feel like that I Am the Majority moniker was sent out for folks who feel like they're part of the law-abiding majority. It gets up every day and goes to work, works hard, tries to get it right. And it just seems like they just continue to get browbeat by their government. And so we changed it to We Are the Majority because we feel like it's more expressive of the actual sentiment.
Now, you really were launched onto a national stage by that speech that you gave, and that was in the context of gun rights. And you were frustrated that every time someone did something terrible with a gun, it seemed that political powers would go after people who don't break the law. But since then, your platform has expanded. Do you still feel that the challenges and the emotions that you felt that day remain?
Absolutely. We still see it today, even on a worse scale. I mean, you look across the country and you see how criminals now are being so handled with kid gloves. You know, we have places where you can't be arrested for shoplifting unless you steal more than $900. But at the same time, you have all this talk of of restricting the constitutional rights of law-abiding citizens up to a complete repeal of our Second Amendment. And so the pressure is still on the average ordinary American citizen, that again, that taxpayer that's footing the bill for everything, but then when things go wrong, they're always the first one taxed and last one considered. So I think a lot of that frustration is there for a lot of Americans, and a lot of it is showing it at not only at the ballot box, but also in political participation.
We're talking to Lieutenant Governor, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson. And your book opens describing your child. It tells a lot of your story. And you describe a self-described rat-infested Greensboro home. You are now the first Black Lieutenant Governor in North Carolina history. What do you hope that other people will learn from your journey?
You know, I think what I really hope is it will continue to strengthen not the notion, but the absolute fact that in America, it is not about where you start. It's about the possibilities that you have laid out in front of you. The left would tell you that that I have every strike against me and had every strike against me from the moment I was born, or actually from the moment I was conceived. Number 9 of 10 children born into an extremely poor family in the Deep South, Black. Alcoholic father, uneducated mother. There's no way that I could succeed to this level. And we have. And the reason why we have is because this nation provides the opportunities for every person to succeed based on their own merit. And we would hope that people would be encouraged by our story and quite frankly, encouraged by the stories of others that share our experience so that they would know this is the greatest country, still the greatest country on earth.
Well, we are encouraged by your story, and I know many people are, but you're very aware of the debates that are happening around the country. Why do you seem to be less bothered by the sins of our nation's past, which are very real, than other people are?
Because I look at where we come from, and I see how great it's actually made us. You know, I tell people this all the time. There have been terrible injustices that have happened in this country, terrible institutions that were in this country. We had the institution of slavery. Then we had the institution of Jim Crow. But those things never determined the direction of the country and its people permanently. When I hear the term institutional racism, and say they say this country is institutionally racist. If this country was institutionally racist, we would still have slavery, or we would still have Jim Crow or some form of that. We don't. This country has always, always strived to ensure that everyone has freedom. And here's the thing. Here's the most glorious thing about it. We do it together. People of all different colors, all different religions, men, women, everybody. People of goodwill have come together to stop the injustices that have happened in this country, whether they be slavery, whether they be the issue of women's rights, no matter what it is. People of good character, people who believe in the ideal of America, have come together to end those things. And we continue to strive to do the same today.
You know, there are lots of people in America who would say, you know, Mark Robinson, good for you. We're happy for you. But here's the data. We know that race is still relevant in America. Things are different for people based on their skin color. And that just proves that America is still a racist country fundamentally. You don't share that perspective. What is it about you and your experience that has led you to look at the same set of facts but reach a very different conclusion?
Because everybody in their own community, so to speak, faces difficulties. But here it is. In America, it is not about what is it's not about what is on you, i.e. your skin color. It is about what is in you. When Black Americans faced the most virulent racism in this country at that period during Jim Crow, when that was this overt racist system of Jim Crow was in place, Black Americans were succeeding in their own communities. They had their own schools. They had their own banks. They were overwhelming the 80-90% of mothers and fathers in the home. And they were succeeding at a great level because they knew what was important. They depended on each other and they did not rely on anyone else, i.e. the federal government, to swoop in and help them do anything. We have totally reversed that now. We have this ideology in this country that the federal government is everything up to, including mama and daddy. And we have just pushed excellence aside. So again, I refuse to go along with this ideology that this is a racist nation, because again, it is not about what is on you, i.e. your skin color. It's about what is in you.
Well, and I think there's a lot of evidence to support that as well. And your story is so compelling. I also want to spend a few moments just getting your thoughts on the political landscape that we are dealing with today, some of the issues that are being debated. First, what are your thoughts on President Biden's proposal to, he would say, forgive student loans. Others would say bail out student loans.
I'm totally against the idea of having these, not having these loans paid back. Now, here's what I am in favor of. I am in favor of restructuring these loans to make it possible for the people that owe them to pay payments that are not going to overburden them. I'm totally in favor of that. But when it comes right down to it, the bottom line is this: you took out a loan, pay it back. That's just how I feel about it. Also, along with that, we need to take a hard look at whether or not we should be giving these young people thousands, tens of thousands of dollars, and in some cases, hundreds of thousands of dollars in loans based on no evidence that this will produce anything. Right. And so I think the entire system needs to come under the microscope to see what we need to do, not so that we not to necessarily forgive the loans, but to restructure it in a way that we find young people not being in this position to begin with.
I think that's a very fair point. It is indisputable to me that the higher education system is not functioning as it's currently operating, and reforms are certainly called for, and I hope this does start those conversations. Another question I have for you, another issue. Arizona just passed legislation that gives each child an education savings account with more than $7,000 per child that the parents can use at the school of their choice. Could be public, private, charter, even religious schools. Teachers unions hate it. What do you think?
Teachers unions hate it because teachers unions are part of the cabal that's ruining education. We have to ensure that parents are in control of their education, their children's educational destiny. That has got to be the first tenet of any education system anywhere in this country. Parents have to be in control. And I think that Arizona's made a wise choice, and I think other states, including North Carolina, should follow suit. We need to make sure that parents are in charge of their children's education, not the teachers' union or not any other entity.
Now, if Mark Robinson could make unilaterally one policy change, and we know he can't because you're part of a system, but if you could, what would you like to see changed in America or even in the state of North Carolina?
Gosh, that's a that's a tough question. But if I think if I had to do, if it was anything I could do right now in this country, I think the number one thing that I would do would probably be to secure our southern border. Our southern border being wide open presents a dangerous on every front. The fact that our border is wide open right now is making every state, every community in this nation a border state. We've got to secure that border for the security of our communities, our homes, our families, and for our nation as a whole. Other than that, there's a myriad of things that I would love to do, but we just simply don't have time to discuss them all here. I mean,
that is correct. We do not have time to discuss them all, but we're getting through some of them. Now, I would like your take on the speech that President Biden is going to give tonight. And of course, we haven't heard the speech yet, but we have had some indications of what this speech is going to be. The title, the White House says it's about, quote, the continued battle for the soul of the nation. And I think he's given us some clues about where this is going. Here's some excerpts from President Biden's speech last Thursday. Let's play clip 4.
Trump and the extreme MAGA Republicans have made their choice to go backwards, full of anger, violence, hate, and division. And the whole notion of the burn it all down politics of MAGA Republicans continues to be a drumbeat. Well, the alternative to the Democrats are the MAGA Republicans. If the MAGA Republicans win control of the Congress, it won't matter where you live. Women won't have the right to choose anywhere, anywhere. The MAGA Republicans don't just threaten our personal rights and economic security. They're a threat to our very democracy. We must be stronger, more determined, and more committed to saving America than the MAGA Republicans are destroying America.
Now, Mark Robinson, before you respond to that, Karine Jean-Pierre struck a very similar chord. I want to show the themes here. Let's play clip 10.
The president has been has been really clear about the leadership, right? The MAGA Republicans in leadership. They're the ones who have the platform. They're the ones who, again, the extremist part of the Republican Party. They're the ones who, folks listen to in their own party. And by inciting violence, by trying to take away, they're the ones who are the legislators and trying to take away our rights, trying to take away our freedoms.
Mr. Robinson, it seems that they are bending over backwards to say MAGA Republicans as many times as they can. It seems that the strategy is to get them to vote for Democrats by making Americans scared of Republicans. What say you?
I say this. Let's go back and let's look at what MAGA Republicans, a.k.a. the policies of Donald Trump, did in this country. We had the lowest gas prices we had had in a number of years. Our border was secure. We were energy independent. Our enemies were basically hiding in their basements. They were quiet. We bought, have had peace in Afghanistan. We're ready for a peaceful, proud withdrawal from Afghanistan. But then let's take a look at what President Joe Biden has given us. He shut down the production of our pipeline and gas prices spiraled out of control. He emboldened our enemies overseas by allowing the Russians to have their pipeline, which allowed them to browbeat their European neighbors with their powerful energy supplies. And now they're over in Ukraine. The Chinese are now hovering over Taiwan, and there possibly could be war in the Far East over that. Our enemies are more emboldened now. Our borders wide open. And they talk about violence. Not one time did you see MAGA Republicans burning down anything. They keep referring to January 6th, the one incident on January 6th. But what I want to know is, when is someone going to go after those left-wing Democrats, Antifa, Black Lives Matter, who staged over 700 riots across this country in 2020, took over major cities, burned police cars, wounded and killed police officers and civilians? The violence that they talk about is clearly in their camp. We have it all on video. And for them to actually have the nerve to say that it is MAGA Republicans that are violent is an absolute repudiation of the truth. Nothing could be farther from the truth. And we have to continue to fight back against that narrative, because we all know that the problems that exist in this nation now are because of their bad policies. And the violence that we've seen over this nation over the last 4 to 5 years has come from their side, not our side.
Mark Robinson, last question in about 15, 20 seconds. What's the future for you?
I cannot tell you that. I always tell people that I'm like, this is like riding a roller coaster and God is in control. So we'll see what he has for me over the next hill.
And we look forward to it. He is Mark Robinson. The book is We Are the Majority, available wherever books are sold on September 13th. Pre-order yours today. Mr. Lieutenant Governor, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you, sir.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. A reminder that you can find additional news and commentary over at WashingtonStand.com. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.